good afternoon. Happy to see everyone who can make it back this evening. I hope what I bring before you is edifying. I know it's been edifying to me. This set of passages that we're going to look at this evening is oftentimes it's brought forth in a way that's included with Jesus's road to Calvary. This is oftentimes where that story begins. And it's a very powerful set of passages. Oftentimes it's a set of passages that you can turn to and just think about and meditate on, especially whenever we come and participate in the communion before Christ. It's a set of passages that there's not much hidden from us in these set of passages. Simply reading them and thinking about the imagery and seeing what Jesus went through as he starts the road to Calvary is very powerful to us. And of course, the passages that we were talking about for this afternoon is Jesus going to the Garden of Gethsemane and his prayer to God at that time. The passages that we'll be taking a look at come from Matthew chapter 26, beginning verse 36, as well as Mark chapter 14, Luke chapter 22, in the middle of those chapters as well. I think what I'd like to do to set our minds right is to read the Matthew account before we jump into some thoughts on these passages. So in Matthew chapter 26, we'll begin in verse 36 there. There reads, "Then Jesus came with them to a place called Gethsemane and said to the disciples, 'Sit here while I go and pray over there.' And he took with him Peter and the two sons of Zebedee, and he began to be sorrowful and deeply distressed. Then he said to them, 'My soul is exceedingly sorrowful, even to death. Stay here and watch with me.' He went a little further and fell on his face and prayed, saying, 'Oh, my Father, if it is possible, let this cup pass from me. Nevertheless, not as I will, but as you will.' Then he came to the disciples and found them sleeping and said to Peter, 'What, could you not watch with me 1 hour? Watch and pray, lest you enter into temptation. The spirit indeed is willing, but the flesh is weak.' Again a second time he went away and prayed, saying, 'Oh, my Father, if this cup cannot pass away from me unless I drink it, your will be done.' And he came and found them asleep again, for their eyes were heavy. So he left them, went away again, and prayed the third time, saying the same words. Then he came to the disciples and said to them, 'Are you still sleeping and resting? Behold, the hour is at hand, and the Son of Man is being betrayed into the hands of sinners. Rise, let us be going. See, my betrayer is at hand.'" So these events, this the time here that Jesus comes to the Garden of Gethsemane, these events, as we've been studying, are after some of the events that we've been studying about. Obviously, him telling of Peter's betrayal, the prayer that we've been saying in John. This is post that, and it's a time whenever the hearts and minds of all the disciples are very heavy. So, starting from the beginning here, first we have Jesus and his disciples going to the Mount of Olives in the Garden of Gethsemane. I think this is just an interesting footnote here for us. Gethsemane here is translated to a meaning of oil press, and I think that's fitting. It's just an interesting note that the Mount of Olives, the Garden of Gethsemane, is the Garden of the Olive Press, and which would have been a major point for these people at this time. But where is this garden in relation to where they've been in the city? Well, as far as I can tell, this is probably about half a mile or so from the city center. It's close enough that Jesus and his disciples frequented the garden during his ministry. In Luke chapter 21, verse 37, there reads, "And every day he was teaching in the temple, but at night he went out and lodged on the mount called Olivet." And again, John chapter 18, verse 1 and 2, reads, "When Jesus had spoken these words, he went out with his disciples across the brook Kidron, where there was a garden, which he and his disciples entered. Now Judas, who betrayed him, also knew the place, for Jesus often met there with his disciples." So this seems like it was a common place for Jesus to go and to pray and to enjoy some time in silence and prayer towards God. And it's a place that was well known by his disciples as well as Judas. He was not trying to hide by going to this garden. It was simply the place that he went to go whenever he needed to pray and meditate in God's presence. So upon arriving at the garden here, he commanded his apostles to sit and wait as he proceeded further into the Garden of Gethsemane. Whenever he commanded them to sit and wait, Jesus then would go on ahead and pray. He knew the reason for this prayer. He knew what he was going to have to do, and he knew the cross was before him at this time. Because of that, he knew that he needed to go to God and pray, and to ask God for strength at this time for him, if he was to make it through it. So his commands to the disciples, he asked them to sit and wait at the entrance of the garden, but he didn't tell them to sit and be idle and to rest at this time. His disciples still had a command that was given to them by Jesus. He told them to pray that they enter not into temptation as well. Jesus, like we said, Jesus knew what was ahead for him. He knew the cross was before him, but he also knew what was ahead for the apostles and disciples at this time. He knew that they would be facing many hardships as they traveled the next couple days together. And he knew that temptation would be strong for them to turn their backs on Jesus as well. So he asked them to sit and pray, to meditate, that they do not enter into that temptation. I think for us today, we also know that idleness can also lead us away from Jesus. Just as Matthew taught about this morning, we're not called to be idle. We're called to be active for Jesus. And Jesus, he doesn't tell them to be idle in this time. He tells them to be active. We too must be on guard against idleness. Whenever we're called to action by Jesus, by God, whenever we become Christians, we need to take that to heart. Idleness can lead us away from Jesus if we are not always on the guard against temptation. The temptations of this life are most tempting, especially when we are not involved in the activities that Jesus has called us to do. Whenever we are not doing the things that we are called to do, that's when the cares of this world and temptations around us really start to creep in, whenever mind is idle and not actively on God. By doing what Jesus asks here, by praying that we enter not into temptation, we guard ourselves against the devil, just as the apostles would have as well if they heeded his word. So from this group, he calls Peter, James, and John, the sons of Zebedee, to follow with him further into the garden. I think these three out of all the apostles were probably the closest to Jesus. We know they surrounded themselves around him. And for Jesus, they were probably the most capable of giving him the human sympathy that he was going to need in this time of deep prayer towards God, whenever his heart and soul is needing them most. So they went a little further on, and from there Jesus left the three and went a little bit further to pray. We're told that he went about a stone's throw away from the three to pray directly to God by himself. Again, he told these three to wait and watch, even unto death. Now the phrase unto death here is interesting. It seems to me that whenever Jesus asked them to wait and watch even unto death, this seems to be a more literal ask of them. He's asking them to watch. If Jesus is to become physically distressed and faint even unto death, they should be ready to render assistance to Jesus if they see that happening. I think that's what he's asking them to do. Now, he could also be asking them to wait and watch even unto death as Jesus prepares for the death on the cross. And I think that's a fine way to think of this as well, as all the apostles should have been waiting and watching and praying at this time as Jesus followed along the path to the cross. But if they were to be literally watching for him to fall and be ready to render physical aid, I think this is because Jesus knew that the emotional toll that was about to come on him would be so great that he literally feared that he may collapse and die at that time. They had a command, just as the other one had a command to pray against temptation. These three apostles also had a command to watch and be ready to render aid toward Jesus Christ. If they had followed the action as they were expected to, then they may not have fallen asleep, as we will see in the next couple verses. So Jesus here, he moves forward, he falls on his face, and he begins to pray. And this is the imagery, whenever we start thinking about the imagery in these passages, about how powerful this prayer was towards God, and setting our minds right on Jesus' humility as a man, as deity, called to be a man, as he faces the cross. The posture that Jesus took was one of giving all reverence to God, knowing that God had the power to make anything possible. So what is the prayer that Jesus asks of God? Well, his first prayer here is that if it were possible, that the hour would pass from him, or that the cup would pass away from him. But knowing that God's will is greatest, he is sure to give God the authority of what would to come, even over his own desires. Jesus' desire at this time was that he would not have to face the cross and not have to bear the cross and drink of that cup that was put before him. That was his desire, but Jesus understands that God's will is greatest, and that he cannot overstep into God's authority at this time. The imagery of the cup here, or the hour that's passing, are used interchangeably in these passages. Both, I think, are used to encompass the entire nature of what Jesus is about to endure on the cross. That would be the physical toll that he's about to bear. And we know that he physically died on the cross. He had to physically suffer these things as a man. He would have to suffer the cross, the crown of thorns, the beatings. All those things were physical tolls that he had to withstand before he died on the cross and returned to God. There was also the emotional toll that he would have to face and bear. The emotional fact that he would be abandoned by those closest to him, that he would be ridiculed and mocked by man, and the emotional toll of just being driven to exhaustion upon the cross. And we also know that there was the spiritual toll that weighed on his mind as well. The spiritual toll being that of the weight of the world being on his shoulders, that if he did not accomplish this as God had planned, the man would have no way of salvation. And we know that the spiritual toll was also the weight of the sins of all mankind on his shoulders that he had to be a sacrifice for upon the cross. So Jesus had a great desire not to go to the cross, but Jesus had an even greater desire to do God's will. Oftentimes, as Jesus does, Jesus left this as our example. We all have desires in this world. We all have things that we don't want to do. But God's desire and God's will has to reign above those things. The weight of God's will has to be greater than the weight of our own will. We have to structure our life after Jesus' example here. In Jesus' time of greatest turmoil and emotional distress, he still structured his life as giving God the authority over all things in his life. One of the questions that many people have at this time is, why didn't Jesus use his divinity to change the course of what he was about to go through? If Jesus was God, couldn't he change the course? Couldn't he command something else into existence so that he didn't have to bear the weight of the cross? Well, he could, but Jesus was appointed to live as a man. Jesus was appointed to live as a man to become an example for us, to become that perfect sacrifice, to prove that man, if they strive as Jesus did on this world, then they could live a perfect life. Jesus' divinity at this time was not to interfere with what was to take place. Becoming like a man, whenever Jesus came to this world, meant becoming like a man even unto his death. All this was to fill the needed sacrifice to allow us to have the chance of heaven. And if Jesus did not die as a man at this time, we would not have the chance of heaven that we do have today. So he continued in his prayer. We read that next, an angel appeared to him to give him strength in Luke chapter 22, verse 43. And this is interesting to me as you think about the humanity of Jesus, as Jesus becoming a man, and all the miracles that Jesus performed on this world, the miracles that he performed proved that he was divinity, proved that he had the power of God. But whenever Jesus approaches God in prayer, he proves that he, and the arrival of the angel proves that he was going to do this as a man. He did not rely on his divinity. He relied on the support that God sent in the form of the angel to take him through the next steps in his life. If Jesus was to die as a man, then he would have to go through it without the powers of divinity. And by shunning his divinity in the most needed hour he was to face, he has proven that he is God. He has proven that he came to live and die as a man. And he will prove that he is risen to give us salvation. Next, it's recorded how his sweat became as great drops of blood. I know I've heard many examples of this and different lessons that include this in it. I think for us, it's just important to know that this is an example of the great physiological toll of knowing what was ahead for Jesus. As he went to pray, knowing what was ahead, he prayed so hard that his sweat became great drops of blood. And the effort of the prayer was putting that much strain onto him that these events occurred. Well, from here, as he concluded this first prayer, he rose and he returned to the three disciples. And at this point, he found them asleep. And whenever he finds them asleep, he turns around. He gives them, at this point, the same command as he gave the other disciples when they first entered into the garden. He tells them to rise and pray, to not enter in temptation. Again, he is giving them an action. The action is to prevent them from idleness and falling away from Jesus. And to Peter, he speaks directly. Whenever he speaks to Peter, he says, "The spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak." This is important to us. As strong as our spirit is still contained in this physical body. And controlling our physical body is often much more difficult than simply spiritually desiring to follow Jesus. So whenever we are spiritually pursuing after Jesus, whenever we are trying to spiritually do those things that Jesus has commanded, it's oftentimes those are the easy things for us to do, to give our heart and our mind to Jesus, especially whenever it seems easy to do so in the world. But physically, changing our physical bodies to put off the things of the flesh, that's often very difficult for people who are coming to Jesus. I think that's the sentiment of this phrase, "The spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak." And the sleep here, the sleep of the apostles, I don't think it's much of a surprise that they were asleep. Considering all that they had been through in the hours and days leading up to this event, they were exhausted. They've been through a lot. They've seen many things. They have been physically tested. They have been mentally tested. And now they're in the Garden of Gethsemane, which seems like it would be a pretty relaxing place to be, being in a very tranquil garden, and Jesus has left them at this time. It's probably later in the day, probably around bedtime, and they fall asleep. We know sleep is a powerful thing in our lives. If only they knew how much Jesus truly needed them, then maybe they could have resisted sleep. And Peter, at this point, Peter, who often boasted of himself and his dedication of Christ, is again reminded that he is only human by these interactions. He's already been told by Jesus that he would deny Christ, and again, at this point, he is reminded that that he could not even stay awake with Jesus. Jesus has already told him that, "Peter, you're going to deny me three times upon the cross." Now he's saying, "Peter, I asked you to stay awake, and you couldn't stay awake." These are all things that are reminding Peter of his that he is a man, and that Peter's going to have to guard himself against the temptations of the devil moving forward. Peter, as always, Peter remains a great example of all to all of us of the things that we of the things that weigh on us as humans. We all want to follow Christ, but there's often things that pull us away from him. Peter remains an example to all of us that can take hold on anyone. We too must be diligent in watching Christ. Whenever Christ calls us to follow and watch him, we must be diligent to do so, lest we fall away. We too are human, just as Peter was human, and the cares of this flesh are often heavy on us, just as they were heavy on Peter. But Peter remains an example that we can, if we strive after Christ, we can be a great worker for him. After this, Jesus returns to pray once again. Once again, he prays that if the only way for the Father's will to be done is for him to face death, then he will do it. Again, he gives the power to God Again, he doesn't lift his own will above the Father's. He's praying. He has an ask of God, but he doesn't make that ask a stipulation for what he will face. Christ is going to do what God has sent before him, no matter what. After the second prayer, he once again returns to the disciples. He finds them asleep a second time. This time, in the verses, we're given a cause of their sleep, a reason why they're sleeping. The cause of sleep is that their eyes were heavy. That's very matter of fact, it seems like. That's the cause for sleep for most people, is that their eyes were heavy. But sleep is a powerful part of our lives. After the first reprimand that they should stay awake, they once again fell asleep. And sleep is one of those things in our lives that we can't run away from. Everyone needs sleep. There's no lack of examples of people sleeping in extreme situations, situations where it seems like no matter what, they should be awake for, whether it's natural disasters, whether it's imprisonment. We see the movie examples of people being thrown into prison, they're sleeping. That's a very natural thing for humans to do, but Jesus called us to be prepared, even whenever our physical situations do not necessarily rely on it. Now, I don't think Jesus is teaching that we're not allowed to take naps whenever we're tired. I think he's teaching us that we should ready our mind in all things in this life. The apostles here, they didn't know how to answer the Lord whenever he approaches them the second time. We were told that they couldn't make an adequate apology for their sleepiness. So, once again, Jesus leaves them a third time to pray for a third time. And again, the same prayer is prayed that if that the Father's will be done. And this is an important example to us, I think. Our needs in this life may not change. We may have the same need from God for weeks, months, and years at a time. Whenever we look around at those around us, we may think that things aren't changing. We may feel as though if we keep praying to God the same prayer, it's redundant. No one likes redundancy. But we shouldn't feel as though our prayers need to change whenever our needs are not necessarily changing around us. If we have the same needs, we should still be bringing them to God no matter what, no matter if they change or if they don't change. God does not grow tired of hearing our appeals to him, so as long as there is the need about us, we should continue to pray for it. It's unfortunately too easy for us to forget about things that have not changed around us, or it's easy to forget about praying for the mundane things around us whenever it feels like just simple repetition or things have not changed. God still hears our prayers, and God is still faithful to answer prayers, and it's still prudent for us to pray for those things even if they seem redundant and mundane about us. Repetition is not a bad thing whenever we go to God in prayer. Now, that's not as vain repetitions as we were taught about. This is simply continuing to pray for the things that need to be prayed for. Once again, Jesus returns to his disciples a third time here, and once again he finds them asleep. I like the ESV version, the ESV translation, Matthew chapter 26 and verse 45. I think it gives a better connotation of Jesus' reaction the third time that he approaches the disciples. In that version, Matthew chapter 26, verse 45, there reads, "Then he came to the disciples and said to them, 'Sleep and take your rest later on. See, the hour is at hand, and the Son of Man is betrayed into the hands of sinners. Rise, let us be going. See, my betrayer is at hand.'" The way that this translation puts it, I think it's a better translation of what Jesus was getting across. He was sympathetic towards the disciples at this time. He knew that they were sleepy. He knew that they wanted to rest. I'm sure he wanted to rest as well. But there was still work to be done. And there are two parts to his response in finding them asleep at this time. First, he tells them to sleep and to take the rest later on. What does Jesus mean by this? He means that the time for them to be a comfort to Jesus, why they had followed him to the garden in the first place, had passed. There's new work to do. There's a new step they have to take. And the time to be comforting to Jesus has passed. However, the upcoming event would still prevent them from obtaining the rest that they desired. I think if nothing else were to occur at this moment, then then the apostles probably would have been able to take their sleep and to regain their sleep. But that was not to be so at this time. Second, Jesus tells them that they need to rise, that the betrayer is at hand. Now, this is going to be from the disciples' perspective. Whenever they open their eyes and they see what's ahead of them, it's going to be Judas and those who are betraying Jesus approaching. Even though Jesus would have allowed them to sleep, the need for them, the apostles at this time, was that they arise and leave because Judas was about to arrive. And it's at this point that Jesus no longer has any time to continue in his prayer in the garden. It's at this point that Judas, the betrayer, is approaching. And it's at this time that the apostles would begin to be tempted in their faithfulness to Jesus, as he had predicted that all of them would be tempted to leave him at this time. So what can we learn from the prayer that Jesus gave here? I think the first thing that we can learn from this prayer is that in our time of greatest need, we should first give God the authority and the power over all things in our life. Giving God the authority to rule over us is what he commands of us. It's what Jesus did. And it's what we should do anytime we are in a time of great need. If we rely on God, if we give him, if we trust God that his will be done, then the cares of this life have no more power over us. Number two, I think in our time of greatest need, we should also lean on our Christian family. Just as Jesus had brought the apostles with him to the Garden of Gethsemane, and then he brought the three further into the garden with him, being able to lean and to rely on our Christian family in our time of need is an important thing for us. We should not be ashamed to ask for sympathy and support whenever we need it. Just as Jesus needed the support at this time, we too need to rely on our Christian brothers and sisters. On the other side of that, if we are the ones who are called to be giving the support, if we are called by our brother to lift them up, we need to be ready to lift them up. We should be present with them. And that doesn't mean physically present next to them to put a shoulder underneath them. Being present for those around us can mean being emotionally present, can mean being spiritually present with them wherever they need spiritual guidance. But all this means being available to those who need us. I think we can also learn that the temptation of sin is always around us. Even in the Garden of Gethsemane, in the calm of the night, there was still temptation around the apostles. And Jesus told them to pray against that temptation that was about to encroach upon them. It doesn't matter what stage of life we are in. It doesn't matter how calm our life seems. There's always temptation around us, and we should continue in prayer towards God that we enter not in temptation, into that temptation about us. And from here, again, we will continue Jesus along the road to Calvary. But that concludes my thoughts of this time. I hope that what I brought before you has been edifying. As I said, this is a very strong, powerful set of passages, and something that should always be in our minds whenever we think about the sacrifice that Jesus made upon the cross is starting in the Garden of Gethsemane. I don't know how everyone is this evening. I don't know what is in your life, what needs you have at this time. If you've not become a baptized believer, Christian, for Jesus, we are taught that you can come before him at this time and repent of your past life, confess that Jesus Christ is the Son of God, and be baptized to become a faithful Christian, to begin your walk as a Christian. And if you are a Christian, if you've fallen away, we're told that there are ways to come back. If you've done things in your life that you're ashamed of and that you want to ask for forgiveness, or if you need strength prayed for on your behalf, you can come before, you can ask for those things from your Christian family and before God. We know the prayer of the faithful avails much. So if you find yourself in either camp, we ask that you come forward and stand and sing the song of invitation.